Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news for 30 years in two languages all over the world. Here in the United States, I've interviewed four presidents, worked at four of the U.S.'s major television networks. I don't like what they do, by the way, because I think news should be honest and direct and impactful. And this is Direct Impact. I want to start by showing you a picture of somebody who's really not supposed to be front and center in the news, but suddenly is. This is Janet Yellen. See her there? Her title is Treasury Secretary for the United States of America. As such, she doesn't really make foreign policy, nor is she supposed to. In fact, Treasury Secretaries and Federal Reserve Chairs, which was her previous job, they're supposed to stick to essentially accounting and economics. They usually shy away from engaging in politics, certainly world politics. But here she is, sharing her personal opinion on the Middle East.
I think America stands behind Israel, period. We stand with Israel. America has also made clear to Israel we're working very closely with the Israelis, that they have a right to defend themselves.
But wait, there's more. Here she is now assuring the world that the U.S. has plenty of its taxpayers' money to spend and will continue to do so by giving tens of billions of dollars of it to Ukraine, while also giving tens of billions more to Israel and whatever else it might need.
I think the answer is absolutely. America can certainly afford to stand with Israel and to support Israel's military needs. And we also can and must support Ukraine in its struggle against Russia.
By the way, she's not alone. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is assuring Israel, as he has Ukraine, that when it comes to funding, quote, we got your back. That's what he's saying. We got your back. Plenty of money. Don't worry. Then there's National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, who's also assuring his corporate media friends that he will put together a new weapons package for both Israel and Ukraine, which for starters will be significantly more than the $2 billion each that they've already guaranteed.
I'm not going to take the place of the OMB director who will present the request that we send up. But the president was very clear today that we will be making a request to the Congress. And it will include a request for funding for support to Israel. And he has also been equally clear that we are going to renew our request to the Congress for aid to Ukraine. What exact form that all takes, that will be worked out and presented by others, not by me. But the notion that we're going to go up and ask for Israel aid and ask for Ukraine aid, that's unequivocal. We are going to do that.
And, of course, the coup de grace, there's the president himself, Mr. Biden. Fresh off his visit to Israel, Mr. Biden told reporters that he will now tie together his funding with to Ukraine with the funding for Israel. It's a kind of a twofer, right? Or maybe better said, if you want one from column A, you got to take one from column B.
That's why tomorrow I'm going to send to Congress an urgent budget request to fund America's national security needs, to support our critical partners, including Israel and Ukraine. It's a smart investment that's going to pay dividends for American security for generations. Help us keep American troops out of harm's way.
Now, if you're a U.S. taxpayer, like I am, and you're hearing this cha-ching, cha-ching sound of a cash register going off in your head with all of these numbers, while your money is being spent on causes that have really nothing to do with you or your family, rest assured, you are not alone. In fact, there are members of Congress who are now asking some of these same questions.
I don't trust them from day one. They're war pimps. That's all, and their business is very good right now.
Borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine makes no sense.
You know who else starting to ask? You know who else starting to worry about this money? Money he thought was promised to him, but may now be going somewhere else toward a cause he fears may trump his? Yeah, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky. It explains, say press reports, why he was so eager to try and combine his cause with that of Israel's. How'd he try to do that? Well, by literally inviting himself to join the U.S. delegation as they met with Israeli officials immediately after the Hamas attack. Interesting move, right? Well, instead of being welcomed, though, he was kind of humiliated. That's how it was reported globally, by the way. That's not my word. It was reported that way in newspapers like India's Hindustan Times. In fact, what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu essentially told the Ukrainian president was, thanks, but no thanks. Netanyahu's exact words to Zelensky were, quote, this is not the right time. Ouch. So here's what's going on. Now that Zelensky's obviously sensing something about this situation, while U.S. officials in the Biden administration continue to promise Ukraine that their check is on the way, history is telling a different story, as there are countless examples in U.S. foreign policy of unkept promises when priorities just changed. And there's no bigger priority in U.S. foreign policy, by the way, than the state of Israel.
Americans need to remember, it's not that Israel needs America. America needs Israel. Israel is the front line of defense for the Iranian regime and terrorists that want to hurt us and want to hurt our friends. And we need to be honest with the American people.
So will U.S. funding shift toward Israel and away from Ukraine? Really too early to tell. But those closest to the situation seem to be feeling that it's all but a foregone conclusion at this point. And the person coming to that conclusion, by the way, is, this is going to maybe shock you, maybe not, none other than the finance minister of Ukraine himself, Serhii Marchenko, in a moment of candor, has told Reuters that as he sees it, donors are tiring of Ukraine. Speaking at the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank meetings in Marrakesh, Morocco, Marchenko said that his country has been promised billions of dollars, but he's still waiting for it. And then he admitted the following. And now let's talk about the U.S. Congress. It's at an impasse, specifically over spending. And in large measure, it's about the spend that's being sent to Ukraine. And as you've been hearing during these arguments, many on the Republican side of the aisle are calling it money that is not well spent. It's a problem that has, in fact, reached a fever pitch, so much so that it's already cost the old Speaker of the House his job. It has sent the entire body reeling.
Just tell us. Just tell us. What was in the secret Ukraine side deal? What commitments were made to President Biden to continue the spending of President Biden in exchange for doing things for President Biden? It is becoming increasingly clear who the Speaker of the House already works for, and it's not the Republican conference.
But there is an even bigger concern for Ukraine, that you have to be someone like me, someone who's like an American insider to really appreciate it. But you have to understand the American spirit. You see, we Americans are, if nothing else, man, we are extremely fickle. And we fall in love and we fall out of love with the latest media fad like nothing you've ever seen before. NBC, CNN, Fox News, they sell it and we buy it until they sell us something else, and then we just move on to the next thing, whatever else they're selling now. One day Afghanistan is the worst place in the world and we've got to attack, until it isn't. Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Oops, maybe they don't. Syria, Yemen, Libya. It's so confusing, right? Hell, Vietnam used to be the domino that would tip over lots of countries. and make them all commies and destroy the world. Today, Vietnam's our trading partner. Hello. Funny how it works, right? And then there's the war on terror, whoever those people were. All replaced by the next thing. The question for Ukraine is, in the fickle world of U.S. politics, the 24-hour media cycle, the American voters who are simply used to moving on, how does it remain relevant? How does Ukraine remain relevant? And how does it avoid not being replaced or replaced by the next big thing? Hey, by the way, I'd like to continue this conversation with you. What do you say we do it on Twitter, or X, as it's now called, I think? My handle, Rick Sanchez TV. Rick Sanchez TV. And I'll be looking for you there. Okay, when we come back, why have things gotten even worse for those who want to continue to send funds to Ukraine? I'll tell you.
Ну давай попробуем хотя бы кружок.
В СПВ революция, она началась уже непосредственно в ходе СВО. То есть мужики в гаражах начали из запчастей, покупаемых на Алиэкспрессе, собирать там сотнями эти одноразовые камикадзе.
Мы не отправляем ни одного аппарата на фронт, не проведя тесты, не подняв его в воздух.
С опытом, когда уже по тысячу идет дронов, уже по слуху начинаешь понимать неисправность большинства.
Получая от нас такую посылку, бойцы на передовой, в принципе, уже могут просто достать аппарат, достать к нему аккумуляторную батарею, ну и все, собственно говоря, боец его включает и полетел.
Хороший рабочий дрон. Сейчас самое нужное на фронте, потому что это уже новая война, совсем другая. Будущее за ними.
The choice between democracy and autocracy is a false one, because the ultimate issue is about who controls information, the means of production and distribution, and who controls money and debt. And increasingly in the United States, or for that matter, in China, Russia, and other countries, is controlled by multinational corporations, which are not an alternative to government, but are rather a form of government itself, which is unaccountable.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. Two things have happened recently that have to be extremely concerning for Ukrainian President Zelensky, on top of some of the things we previously discussed. One is that Twitter owner Elon Musk is expressing his very pointed disappointment with the Ukrainian counteroffensive and is sharing it. And he's going on to say that, in fact, the U.S. should already start having talks with Russia to establish some kind of truce here. But even more concerning than that probably is the fact that the U.S. House of Representatives, you know, this battle that's been going on for so long, well, guess what? They finally have a new speaker or a new leader in the House, Congress. His name is Mike Johnson. He's a conservative Republican, and he's been expressing his disapproval of sending more funding to Ukraine. And joining us now to talk about this is Mark Sloboda. He's in international relations. He's also a security analyst. He's based in Moscow, and he has a background in both defense, military, and security. So he's really the perfect person to talk to about this. I want to start with this, Mark. So we got Janet Yellen who comes out and she says, look, we've certainly got enough money to fund Taiwan and Israel and Ukraine. And so does Anthony Blinken. So does Jake Sullivan. The president of the United States says we have plenty of money. Don't worry about it. In fact, we're also going to do a package that involves taking care of sending funds to the border as well, along there with Texas and Arizona. So Are they right? Got plenty of money. No, nothing to worry about.
Well, Rick, thanks for having me. It's always an honor to, and a pleasure to be on the show. Well, I mean, I guess that is a question that you really need to be asking directly to U.S. taxpayers, right? The Pentagon budget for last year was nearly $1 trillion, right? Not counting conflict spending, which is in excess. And Biden has just asked for another $106 billion on top of that. This goes to fuel, a whole host of military requirements, including a network of well over 800 military bases around the world, which is, you know, about 750 military bases more than anyone else has around the world. And most of those others are U.S. allies. So what the U.S. taxpayer is funding is primacy. Right. Their military primacy, the goal of the U.S. to not only have the most powerful military in the world, but to have a more powerful military than all of any potential rivals, challengers, or discontents at the same time.
And interesting you say that. I'm going to interrupt you because you just made me think of something that's been kind of gnawing at me a little bit. As an American living here in the great United States of America, a country that I'm very proud of for many great things that we have done, lately I have gotten the feeling that everything military and militaristic and warlike is omnipresent. You cannot go to a sporting event without having to watch rockets, literally planes, warplanes going above as part of the beginning of the game. You can't go to any event anywhere without having soldiers come out with the flag, which, you know, then you have to salute the flag and then, you know, sing the national anthem, which I'm fine with, obviously, but it just seems like there's this preeminence toward everything being so military. You can't turn on the TV without seeing something that's adjoined to the military and defense and war. And then on top of all that, you just said that we're almost spending $1 trillion, the most ever, according to what the Biden administration just did. And yet, every time you turn around, somebody's asking you for a donation for our soldiers, for the military, et cetera. It's kind of weird. And I'm probably not the only one in this country who's noticing that. But it's not something you want to say publicly because then people are going to think you're not patriotic.
Yeah, I think there's really you made a good point. I think that on multiple levels, not just the military and the military spending itself, but the militarization of U.S. society on, you know, everything from sporting events to a completely militarized police force across the country, to domestic intelligence services like the FBI and everything, are incredibly militarized to a degree that.
And I'll do you one more: movies, the media, the cable news channels, the newspapers. They carry on the drumbeat of war so that when suddenly we're asked, should we be sending money to country X because we need to help them? Everybody's like, yeah, I guess so. Is that what we're supposed to do? Sure. Uh-huh. But it's kind of like that's how they get you because no one's saying why. No one's asking that question, Mark.
When the U.S. was launching cruise missile strikes into Syria a few years ago, I remember there was a journalist anchor for one of the big three. I can't remember what the moment, but he was on, you know, embedded with the forces on the ship. And he was live and talking about how the sight of a cruise missile was the most beautiful thing he has ever seen in his life. And I'm like, I mean, I'm ex-U.S. Navy, and I don't know. I've seen a lot more beautiful things than cruise.
It's a glorification of everything having to do. And I'm not against having a standing military. I'm not against using that military when necessary. But 20 years in Afghanistan to get absolutely nothing but make a whole lot of people rich. Same we could say about the situation in Iraq. And now this story we're getting that we have to just continue to give Israel whatever the hell it wants, no matter what it is, that we, quote, got their back. Oh, and we're still going to be pumping money to Ukraine, and we're going to be pumping money to Taiwan. After a while, it starts to sound friggin' crazy, especially considering that most Americans today, according to most studies, barely can get by paycheck to paycheck without going broke.
Yeah, I mean, I have to wonder, why haven't the American people demanded accountability from their politicians? We saw $20 trillion wasted on this failed fiasco where our politicians and our military lied to us continually about the state of the conflict for 20 years. Iraq, Libya, Syria, where we still have U.S. occupation forces sitting on Syria's oil and wheat fields, right?
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, because that's an interesting point you raise. And this is one that I think we need to address. And it has to do with really two things. Our media, which is where we get our information, you know, the average working American, good guy, good gal, they put in their hours, they come home, they get their beer, they sit in front of the TV, and they're going to watch, I don't know, Wolf Blitzer, Sean Hannity, who the hell knows, some cable news channel or something, and they're going to expect that they're going to be told the truth. And in fact, they're generally not. What they're not even, those people would never question what our military or what our government does in terms of military expansionism. And it's really interesting to watch, because in the past we used to. And then the second part of this is politicians. They're supposed to protect us against this kind of spending, but they don't. Why is it that those two entities seem like they're in cahoots with whatever the heck the military-industrial complex wants, which is more wars and more spending?
Well, one of them, of course, is the revolving door between the U.S. military complex and both the politicians and often even journalists. I mean, there is that, you know, as lobbyists, there's a huge revolving door. But it's more than just personal interest, because the military industrial complex is the vehicle for an ideology of American exceptionalism that demands U.S. primacy and hegemony. And that goal seems to be pushed by the U.S. media. And remember, there's a reason why we call the media the fourth estate, as if they are a fourth and an equal branch of government. Mm-hmm. How many press conferences have we've seen where reporters asking questions of either the State Department, the White House press corps, the Pentagon, badgering, why haven't you sent this weapon to Ukraine? Not asking, but badgering, why haven't
you? You mean like reporters did during the Vietnam War, which got us out of that fiasco, right?
Yes. Into and then out of, but there was a big, huge narrative change somewhere along the line that just, I don't know if the media is capable of that type of dissent that they eventually became capable of during the Vietnam War today.
As long as a guy at a military corporation, whether it's Raytheon or anybody else, can put money in the pocket of these politicians will be able to support wars, because they're essentially accepting legal bribes. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. Biden himself got over $100 million to become the president of the United States, much of it from some of these corporations. So how, as an American, am I not to then doubt whether the reason he's really fully in support of Ukraine has less to do with my needs and my kids' needs and more with his needs?
Yeah, the question, how do you vote against Northrop Grumman and Goldman Sachs? I mean, it's impossible.
This is a serious problem that we have in this country right now, though. I mean, it's how do we, I mean, I'm an American, and I want this country to do right. And I'm not saying we don't want to be involved militarily from time to time, but it starts to look like it's just a freaking game. That's the problem.
Unfortunately, as long as the U.S. dollar continues to be the global reserve currency, which is starting to wane, but only slowly and not a process that will happen, then the U.S. can keep printing more money and borrowing more money. And it's called, quantitative easing. And they can continue spending these enormous military budgets. But I think that there's more than just personal interest. There is a broad bipartisan consensus on the goals of U.S. foreign and military policy in pursuit of primacy and hegemony. Ben Rhodes called this enormous establishment that really decides U.S. foreign policy.
Mark, you're a delight to talk to. Thank you, my friend. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for having me, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
Likewise. Hey, before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. It's simple, really. What we want to do is try and de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes where we think only our information matters, and it's all we read or see. Truths don't live in boxes. Truth is everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.